See What You Made Me Do, Power, Control, and Domestic Abuse. Written and read by Jess Hill.
Notes on my methods. In this book, wherever possible, I have replaced the term domestic violence with domestic abuse. I did this because in some of the worst abusive relationships, physical violence is rare, minor, or barely present. As Yasmin Khan from Eidfest Community Services writes in an article for Women's Agenda, many women that we support assure me there has been no domestic violence. He's never laid a hand on me. But on deeper questioning and reflection, realise they have been abused for many years in ways that have been more subtle but are just as damaging and potent. Khan has made it her mission to replace domestic violence with domestic abuse, as police have done in the UK. Let's change the language, she writes, and stop sending a message that it's only a serious issue when there's been physical violence. When I read Khan's article, it stopped me in my tracks. I knew immediately we need to make this change. The entire book was re-edited to reflect it, where appropriate, and the subtitle was changed on the cover. As my wonderful editor Kirsty Innes-Will assured me, the gain is worth the effort. There is a distinct power imbalance built into the journalist-source relationship. The journalist usually has ultimate power over what gets published. For the survivors featured in this book, I wanted to flip that and give the power back to them. If this process was not a positive experience for them, there was no point in doing it. Every survivor I interviewed was reassured that this was their story, not mine. This meant giving them the chance, wherever possible, to review their story, suggest revisions, or ask for things to be deleted, especially if there were safety concerns. The process was sometimes laborious, but always worthwhile. It has been an honour to work with every one of them. Where necessary, I've also omitted the cultural backgrounds of several people in this book. I did so either for the victim's protection or because I have identified them as parties to a family law case, and it's illegal under Section 121 of the Family Law Act to publish anything that might identify a party to the proceedings. The stories in the chapter on family law are those of adult and child survivors slash victims. It was considered unsafe to contact the alleged abusers in each case. I did, however, look carefully at their affidavits and strove to be as fair as possible. Some of the ideas in this book are heavily contested, as I have made clear throughout. Although I've been fortunate enough to have some of the best minds review many of the following chapters, the responsibility for errors and inaccuracies is entirely mine. If you notice something of concern, please contact Black Ink and we will do our best to correct future editions. Introduction. At the Office of Safe Steps, Victoria's 24/7 family violence helpline, the phones have gone quiet. "I get nervous when they stop ringing," says one worker. It's a rare occurrence. At its busiest, Safe Steps receives a call every 3 minutes. Many women are repeat callers. On average, they will return to an abusive partner 7 times before leaving for good. "You must get so frustrated when you think a woman's ready to leave and then she decides to go back," I say. "No," replies one phone counsellor pointedly. "I'm frustrated that even though he promised to stop, he chose to abuse her again." A year into my reporting on domestic abuse, I had a terrible realisation. It was 2015 and I was hanging clothes out to dry on a stunning summer night, alive with the screeching of fruit bats. The air was cool on my skin. I felt content, peaceful, safe. As I walked towards our back steps, washing basket in hand, a cascade of thoughts swept through me with such force it made my eyes sting. To feel safe in the dark, even in my own backyard, was a privilege.